Blog Talk Radio.
Had difficulty breathing, or have you been with someone else who had difficulty breathing and found yourself or this other person gasping for air? Do you know what to do, how to prevent this, how to cope with it, and how to possibly heal it? Stay tuned. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, somatic body psychotherapist, health and wellness coach, and therapist, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series, the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of the Healing Through Love Lessons. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who keep proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. Kevin Glynn, MD, was a senior physician with Scripps Health in La Jolla, California, serving as chief of pulmonary medicine and medical director of respiratory care. With personal experience as an asthma sufferer and 30 years of treating breathing problems, he wrote this comprehensive, easy-to-understand book. Brett, so I'm delighted to welcome you, Dr. Kevin Glynn.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
And what's wonderful, not that it's a good thing to go through that experience, but for your patients, to have a doctor who has personally experienced something like what they're going through, that's just wonderful. So I would like to ask you to please tell us about your background, your medical training and experience. And you mentioned along the way that you became a cartoonist. I'd love to hear about that. And then what led to writing this powerful and really informative and valuable book at this time?
Well, sure. So I grew up fighting asthma, and I can remember what it was like to be dragged to the emergency room in the middle of the night for a shot of adrenaline because I couldn't breathe. And that really affected my whole growing up, my whole identity. Eventually, I decided to go to medical school, and then along the line decided to specialize in respiratory diseases because I felt a bond with lung patients. I had been there too, and so that's what I've done for the next half century. And I am delighted then to share my experiences with other patients.
But you just mentioned that you've been a cartoonist. What did you do these cartoons about?
Oh, I used to draw medical cartoons. I started out drawing them for the local medical society magazine, and it was fun. And so I self-syndicated myself, and I sent cartoons around the country to various medical society magazines, and I had a lot of fun doing it. Didn't make much money. I think probably $50 was the most I ever made in a month. And but I enjoyed it and got a kick out of it.
And not everything is done for money, but it seems that you have a light side to you, lighthearted side, which is nice. So can you experience your personal experience? I mean, can you explain your experience dealing with asthma and what have you done to help the asthma, you know, just as a start?
Well, in my own case, I grew up in the era before we had the great medications that we have now. And so, for example, I lived my life getting shots of adrenaline and breathing foul tasting inhalations and medicines that made me sick to my stomach and shots and so forth. Two of my children and two of my grandchildren also have asthma. Their life is much
really?
Better than mine. They have inhalers. They've had inhaled steroids. And they lead full lives. They play sports. They run. They do all the things that were hard for me to do. And that's part of the message in the that I'm trying to impart, is that as we learn more about these things, asthma being a prime example, there's light at the end of the tunnel. If we're smart and we use our good sense that nature has given us, we can help one another.
So I have a question. What are some of the threats that all of us face when it comes to our breathing?
Well, there are threats from outside and threats from inside, and that's, in fact, that's how I divided the book. So outside threats include infections, pneumonia, influenza, viruses of various kinds, and then dust, fumes, carcinogens, fires, smoke, carbon monoxide, all those things. Then internal things that we're born with that affect our breathing, cystic fibrosis, asthma, sickle cell disease, and then more recently recognized things like sleep disorders. So all these play a role in determining whether we're going to be able to enjoy life and enjoy the gift of breathing that nature has given us.
So I have a question about genes. You talked to some of those are internal and obviously genetic, that we have a genetic predisposition to the disease. But people also talk about some genetic predispositions not actually getting activated. Have you noticed that? Are there
well,
things
absolutely.
People can do?
And asthma is a good example of that. If we're not exposed to whatever it is that triggers these things, it will not happen. I'll tell you a little story on that. A friend of mine who was an allergist at the University of Michigan had Asian students that came in with ragweed asthma. Well, they had mm-hmm. the tendency to asthma in their genes, but they had never been exposed to ragweed until they got to the United States. So that kind of an experience is all throughout medicine.
Mm. That's powerful. So is there something people can do? I mean, how do they know that they have a genetic predisposition?
Well, so far, all that they've been able to do is wait until they get sick. But now the science is getting to the point where we're going to pretty soon be able to predict these things by doing genomic analysis of cells from the person's body and predict, uh-oh, you're vulnerable to asthma, you're vulnerable to heart disease, you're vulnerable to psychological stress and mental problems even. So it's all throughout our everyday life.
And you mentioned that there's someone getting a Nobel Prize this week. Please tell us about that.
Yeah, that was in the paper this morning. And part of it that I perked up on it was this Dr. Allison from Texas had spent some time at the Scripps Research Institute, which is part of Scripps, where I practiced. Anyhow, these two physicians, one in the United States and one in Japan, shared the Nobel Prize for unlocking how immunology can be used to treat cancer. And lung cancer is one of the, it's too early to draw any firm conclusions. Immunotherapy for lung cancer looks like it's far superior to chemotherapy in being able to prolong people's lives. And this has all just happened in the last few years. and it's exciting, and it should give people hope.
Mm-hmm. That there are new discoveries and there are people working to find solutions.
Absolutely. And as somebody said, and we all climb on the shoulders of the people who have come before us. That's right. Step by step, we learn these things.
Mm-hmm. Care. And what I was excited about is you're talking about something in the news, something wonderful in the news, at a time when we hear so much negativity in the news. And so it's nice to hear that something good is going on. There's a lot of good going on when we look for it.
That's
so
right.
My next question. Yeah, go ahead.
No, that's what I was just going to say. We have to. I don't blame the media. They report what's exciting, and the Nobel Prize winner is exciting. So.
Mhm. Okay. So now a question about our homes. You talk about toxins in our home. So tell us what they are. What kind of things? Is there something we can do about it to maybe eliminate them?
Yeah, sure. One of the things that listeners may be interested in are what I'm going to call indoor air pollution. You know, there's outdoor air pollution with fires, wildfires and smoke and automobile exhaust and all that. But in our own homes, for example, when we cook, okay, you have to clean the oven. Well, the substances used to clean your oven are caustic. So if you have any kind of underlying asthma, then delegate that job to somebody else. And if you have to do it, make sure that you open the doors, open the windows, maybe put a fan in the room to exhaust the fumes. And if you can ventilate the area, usually you'll be okay.
Wow, but that's something that people would not realize.
Well, these are things, right, that you have to think about.
Okay.
Now, if you've once had a bad experience, then you'll be warned. Another thing is cleaning solutions. I saw several patients over the years that had irritated their lungs by making the mistake of mixing bleach and ammonia in a cleaning solution, and that liberates chlorine, and chlorine is really irritating to the lungs, and some of these people were still coughing and wheezing weeks and months after the exposure. So those are common household solvents that we use, and we need to be careful.
That's very interesting, because there are people in the holistic health area talking about the dangers of a lot of products that we use. So there may be more people nowadays trying to create their own products. So they might think that bleach and ammonia are more healthy.
Well, I think that, bleach and ammonia are not healthy. But the point is good. Every year, hundreds of new chemicals get introduced into stores, things that are used for cleaning, painting, whatever. And so with each of these comes the possibility for irritation of the lungs. Remember, the lining of the lungs is very delicate compared to the skin, very, very filmy, because the job of the lung is to bring oxygen in and carbon dioxide out. And so the lung is very, very susceptible. And all I can say is that being aware of these things will make us smart enough to ventilate, not try to work in a closed environment. Open the doors, in a garage, open the garage doors, use exhaust fans, all those things that help. Because for most people, good ventilation solves the problem.
That's really interesting. Recently, a few weeks ago, I went into my local bank, and I was very struck by an odor in there. They had recently changed the carpets and the furniture, or, you know, they made a whole renovation, and it was a strong scent. And I mentioned it to a few people, and someone online was also bothered by it, but they made so light of it. They didn't understand. So people have to also be aware it needed ventilation.
Yeah, and of course the people who are vulnerable are the people who have underlying allergies and asthma. And so those people are sensitive to things that don't bother the other 90% of us. And once again, the answer is ventilation. You have to have fresh air circulating. And I don't know what went on in the bag, but it might have been some paint solvent. It might have been some formaldehyde that had been used to make carpets. You know, there are dozens of possibilities, but the common denominator of dealing with it is make sure that there's good circulating fresh air wherever you are.
Yeah, what I
and you don't have to go
about,
to medical school to know that.
Right. But I was concerned with their lack of concern, the people working there, and they had to be in that odor or whatever was going on all day long. I was only there for a few minutes. And, you know, no awareness.
That's a good point, right, because then those are the things that lead to workers' comp claims later on. And the psychology of why the people that worked in the bank were defensive, I that's more your realm than mine.
Not so much defensive as just dismissive, you know, like it's not an issue.
Didn't bother me, so it shouldn't bother you, yeah.
Right, something like that. Anyway, is there anything in our diet that you have found can make a difference with breathing problems?
Well, it depends on whether you have allergies or not. In general, things that are inhaled are much worse than things that are ingested. And certainly foods cause a lot of trouble in the gastrointestinal tract, and in allergic people can cause trouble in the lungs as well. For example, I am sensitive to certain kinds of fruits, melons, and if I eat honeydew melon, my mouth itches and I sneeze and when I was younger, I used to cough and wheeze. I don't have that anymore. I'm less sensitive than I was. So in the case of the respiratory tract, foods are less of a problem than they are in the gastrointestinal tract, but they can be in susceptible people.
What about dairy products? Because I hear a lot about that. And I know someone who was a singer and would never take cheese or any kind of dairy before singing.
I think that's the same thing, that there are certain foods that contain molds. And, for instance, recently my wife tried some coconut milk. It's kind of a yogurt substitute. Boy, I took that and I choked up afterwards. There was something in it, and whether it was, I assumed that it was some mold that had been built into the formulation of the. It's a kind of a coconut milk yogurt, and you know, so I'm susceptible to molds. Certain types of wine make me sneeze. Certain cheeses make me sneeze. So there are people like me out there. And they are susceptible. Your friend that's the singer, I would certainly take what she says as give it credence.
So, yeah, maybe talk a little bit about among your patients. What did you find? Were a lot of people allergic to cheese or to wine? Was there some general thing that happened to a lot of people?
Things, foods that contain mold will trigger asthma. one of my friends is one of the people who recognized that the substances that are used to keep green produce looking fresh in a grocery store contain sulfites, which can trigger asthma in susceptible people. So, yes, those things are out there, and interviewing a person with asthma, that was always one of the questions that I learned to ask. Are there any kind of food products that seem to trigger trouble for you? And once in a while, that would be the key to unlocking their trouble.
And what about for other ailments like sickle cell anemia and, you know, any of the other ailments? Do they have some common issues?
Well, the sickle cell people, of course, their problem is it isn't really a respiratory problem, but they die of trouble. The people with sickle cell disease have an abnormality in their hemoglobin, and the red blood cells clump, and they clog up the lungs. So sickle cell patients have a susceptibility to pneumonia, a susceptibility to lung infections, and that can block the little capillaries in the lungs and lead to high blood pressure within the lungs and ultimately cause them to develop respiratory insufficiency. So that's another area where there are exciting developments. They're on the threshold of being able to replace the deficient gene in sickle cell patients, the one that makes their hemoglobin abnormal. And that'll be, I'm sure, in our lifetime. It may not be around the corner, but that's going to make life a lot better for thousands of people.
That's amazing. All right, I'm just going to ask you about a few of them. What about cystic fibrosis?
Yeah, that's, of course, a very common, next to sickle cell disease, that's probably the second most common genetic respiratory disorder. And sickle people, excuse me, cystic fibrosis, people who have cystic fibrosis lack a chemical that's involved in transporting sodium and chlorine in cells. And so their body fluids, whether it's mucus or intestinal secretions, whatever, become thick and cheesy and clog up the airways. So these children are very susceptible to infections. And they live with their lungs chronically infected. And now, just in the last few years, a drug called Ivacaftor came on the market, and it's the first real treatment for cystic fibrosis that there's been. And there are more drugs like it in the pipeline. So that's good news for those people.
All right. Well, those ailments, you know, affect a certain percent of the population. But I know that lung cancer, you know, it has increased the number of people having lung cancer. So maybe talk about that at the moment.
Yeah. That lung cancer, this year, about 300,000 people in the United States will die of some respiratory problem, and half of them will be due to lung cancer, unfortunately.
Wow.
And in lung cancer, we know what the most injurious agent is. It's tobacco smoke. So if I had any other message to leave for the listeners to the program, it would be avoid tobacco smoke. If you live, even if you don't smoke yourself and you live in a household where there's a smoker, the carcinogens in tobacco smoke are the biggest killer that we have. So my own dad died of lung cancer, and he was a heavy smoker, and it was sad. I watched him deteriorate, and And he was addicted to cigarettes and pipes and always had spare supplies of cigarettes in the house. And anyhow, it was painful to watch him. And that was before I went to medical school. I don't know whether that played a role in my choosing pulmonary disease or not, but at some psychological level it might have. So if I can impart to the listeners of the program about that, I'll feel like I've been able to make a contribution. This is the trouble with lung cancer is that there's such a lag, and even if we all stopped smoking today, it would be 10 or 20 years before we'd get over the injurious effects.
Wow. And the other issue I'm seeing is lately I've noticed more smokers. It was a period where it was decreasing, and now it seems to be increasing.
Yeah, actually, tobacco smoking is decreasing in the United States, but it's increasing in other parts of the world. And among young people, see now, they're rather than experimenting with regular cigarettes, they're experimenting with vaping. And that's too new to know for sure what its long-term effects are going to be. But as somebody who has worked in the field, I'm very, very skeptical. I think that the young people with their vaping are going to be they're going to cause themselves trouble in the future. Tobacco is nicotine, whether you take it in tobacco, in smoking it or chewing it, taking snuff, nicotine causes a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm. All right. So now, what about pneumonia? What have you seen? What affects it? What can help it?
Well, pneumonia, of course, is one of the most common causes of death. If you go through hospital statistics, heart attacks and pneumonia are usually the most frequent causes of admission and the causes of death, too. And now as we're getting on into the winter, we're going to see more pneumonia. And a lot of pneumonia will be triggered by viruses like influenza, and then people get secondary bacterial infection in their lungs. The answer to that, I'll put in a pitch for the pneumonia vaccine. It is at least 50% effective. And in elderly people or people with underlying lung disease, it can help and may save their lives. So I urge everybody to make sure that they're up to date on their pneumonia injections.
Okay. And the last question I have, which may not really be so much a physical problem, but I don't know, is panic attacks. Have you had many people show up in your office who had a panic attack?
Oh, yeah. Because shortness of breath is one of the things that they feel. And that's used to be a big problem because were the people suffering from panic attacks, where they had some association deep inside their mind that was triggering fear, or were they having blood clots in their lungs? Did they have some form of weird asthma or a sensitivity to some external agent? And it used to be often difficult to sort that out because, as we were saying a few minutes ago, when in doubt, listen to the patient and give them the benefit of any uncertainty. But sometimes you can't find any thing wrong with the lung itself, and then it's necessary to explore this whole sense of fear. And you probably know 10 times as much about that as I do.
Right. So that's the psychological component of you know, what is the meaning? But there may be, like, someone came to me who had had panic attacks, but when we talked further, it could have been a low blood sugar reaction.
Okay,
just from not having
well, right. Those are the things
well.
That we have to, that we on the medical side have to check out. That's right, because if somebody's got low blood sugar, then their brain is being deprived of nourishment, and that can manifest itself as an uncomfortable feeling. Diseases where the adrenal glands put out too much adrenaline will cause the same thing. So there are organic causes for that sensation of breathlessness and being crowded in fear. And then, you know, now that you mention it, something that is worthwhile talking about too, and that is that people with asthma have panic attacks related to their breathing. And at one time it was thought that psychological stress was a trigger of asthma. And in a sense it is, but it's what it is because I've experienced this myself, is that when you can't breathe, it's frightening.
Absolutely.
And I, I think I'm as well informed as the next person on this. I still keep inhalers. I have an inhaler in my bathroom, but I also have a couple in my desk drawer. And if I'm going away, boy, I don't want to leave home without having a couple of inhalers in my luggage. So, because I know that if I choke up, then I'm going to be very, very worried. And even knowing that I'm in a strange environment and don't have my inhalers will make me worried. And there's a psychological component to every physiological abnormality.
Absolutely. So tell us about your book and how people can get the book.
Sure. So the book is on Amazon.com. It's on Barnes & Noble. Or if anybody's interested, they can get it through my website, which will link them up to one of the booksellers. And the website address is kevinglynn.com. And in there, there'll be a lot more information than you and I have been able to talk about on air this morning. And I hope that it would help people.
Well, Dr. Glynn, thank you so much for being on the show today and sharing what you know, at least some of what you know, and the book reveals a lot more about breathing and breathing problems.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Yes, it was a pleasure. And to those of you listening, I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, drericagoodstone.com, for a complimentary Healing Through Love or Love Mastery Secret session. And currently I have a special webinar that's coming up in a few days. I look forward to speaking to you again soon.